The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah, that cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. In the studio today, we have a good buddy of mine and brand representative for 42 Below Vodka from New Zealand, Paul Frontage. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thanks, Damon. How you going, guys?
Guys, it's just me.
It's all those listeners out there as well, right? I hope there's lots of you.
You were looking at me when
I got out of bed for this.
So you're here today. We're going to talk about lots of things, obviously, like we normally do. You know, cocktails, the bar scenes, get later into the program. We'll talk a little bit about the 42 Below Cocktail World Cup competition. Right now, can you tell us a little bit about 42 Below Vodka and the vision and the quest?
The quest, world domination. Well, 42 Below was started in a garage in Wellington, New Zealand in the late 90s by a gentleman called Jeff Ross, a marketing, advertising executive at the time. He'd been flying back from the United States back to New Zealand, reading the in-flight magazine, and saw an article reading about how a certain American vodka had proclaimed that it was the best in the world because the purest, most freshest ingredients had gone into this. And he was thinking, they're going, well, New Zealand, we're two islands in the middle of the South Pacific Ocean, in the middle of nowhere. We hold a benchmark in the world for water and air purity. And he thought, well, hell, why don't I make a vodka and give this one a good crack? So his wife bought him a still.
That's a good lady.
Right? In New Zealand, it's legal. It's legal to distill spirits in your garage if you want.
Oh, really?
Yep.
So like straight up old school kind of like moonshiner style.
Straight up moonshining. Exactly. I mean, there's not much to do in New Zealand. So distilling seems to
surfing,
then distilling.
Extreme sports, bungee jumping.
There you go. You got me. I'm from there. And I forget about all the fun parts. He started distilling. Basically came across this vodka, 42 Below. It's where New Zealand sits on the map, 42 below the equator. He did it at 42% alcohol, which was a little stronger than the rest at the time. Mm-hmm. And he started selling out of the trunk of his car. So I was lucky enough at the time to be working in a bar in the late 90s. Oh my God. And he approached us and said, listen, I've got this vodka. I want to try it out. I want to kick it off. We were kind of leading the cocktail scene back in those days in New Zealand. And so we did the launch for him. And we were one of three bars in Wellington, New Zealand that kicked it off. And from there, it's really, wow, it's a checkered history of debauchery and fun and craziness. And here I am. 11, 12 years later, and sitting in New York in Bushwick in a great studio looking at a small child trying to eat a pizza.
Nice. That's pretty gangster, selling hooch out of the trunk of your car.
Yep. I mean, he'd do his day job during the day, and then at night he'd collect if we needed an order, he'd drop the bottles off, he'd collect all the empties, because he didn't have enough, he had enough bottles to give and to take back and refill. So that went on for a few years, and then kind of launched to the rest of the country in 2000, 2001. Went to Australia 2002, London and New York at LA, and then we kind of kicked off from there. And basically 5 years later, we kind of got bought by Bacardi, and now we're here.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the cocktail scene in New Zealand, in Wellington.
At the time.
I want a little history on this. I want to know what the cutting edge mythology was there.
Back in 11 years ago, I mean, what we thought we were being exciting with was, for one thing, for New Zealand, we've always been about fresh ingredients and Australia as well. We come from a pretty fertile country, great vegetables, great you name it, Great Everything. So we were, you know, we had, most of the bars were connected to restaurants. There weren't a hell of a lot of cocktail bars on their own like they have like nowadays. So we had the opportunity to go into the Walk-In Chiller and see what they've got there and start using those. But talking about classics, I mean, you know, New Zealand, I think the first cocktail ever written about was a sherry cobbler, and that was in the, you know, late 1800s. What we made was more the Manhattans, the, you know, the Negronis, that sort of thing.
Right, the classics.
The classics, yeah. You know, the whole world knew. We weren't really doing twists on those at all, but, you know.
Doing them strong.
Yeah, but then we'd come up, you know, I mean, we'd take the idea and then we'd use the ingredients that we had on hand in New Zealand. So, you know, like a lot of fresh fruits, a lot of muddling, a lot of shaking, a lot of that sort of stuff.
And that's reflected in the flavored vodkas that you have, like your kiwi, your passion fruit, and things.
Well,
like,
yeah,
that.
I mean, the whole reason why, you know, the vodka market is just, it's outrageous. You know, it'll take you days to count how many vodkas there are in this world, coming in every day and leaving every day. And you know, there's the same old flavors. Well, back when we started in '99, there was the citron, the orange, the raspberry, blah blah blah. Yeah. So we were like, well, bugger that. Let's see what we've got here in New Zealand, and you know, a little point of difference for us to get out there into the global market. So we looked around, and kiwi fruit. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it's not traditionally a New Zealand fruit, but we took it on in the early 1900s, and it grew very well in New Zealand, and we called it the kiwi fruit. Obviously, it's the Chinese gooseberry, but we're kind of famous for it. We passion fruit, which is another, you know, a lot of. I grew up in a backyard of my house. The kindergarten next door had one, and theirs. All our cousins, everybody had passion fruit vines growing. A lot of people did. We also did a fruit called a feijoa, which is pretty. Well, it kind of went off in the States for about a day. I mean, it didn't really hit the palate of the United States, so we kind of ditched that one. In the States, very big in Asia and New Zealand. And then we did one we were quite proud of, and actually we got a little taste here, which I'm going to hand over to you, which is the Manuka honey, which is a native bush honey of New Zealand. It's a really dark, smoky honey. I don't know if the listeners or yourself know anything about New Zealand or the indigenous people of New Zealand. Do you know who they were?
I do not.
There you go. So here's a little history lesson for you guys about New Zealand. The locals.
I'm about to find out. I think
the locals are the Maoris, which it's argued about where they came from, Tahiti or Hawaii, but they canoed across the Pacific Ocean to New Zealand many hundreds of years ago. And we have a tree in New Zealand similar to the tea tree, same family, but it's called the Manuka tree, and it's a native tree to New Zealand. And obviously, this tree flowers, bees harvest the pollen, and they make the Manuka honey, which is used for medicinal purposes. If you go to any, well, the Maoris, they used it for the common cold, on burns, for scars, for, you know, battle wounds. They used to rub it on, and it worked. Even now, you go to health food stores and you find it, and it's pretty huge. It's beautiful honey. If any of you guys can get out there and find a jar, it is phenomenal. On toast, bit of butter, or as we say in New Zealand, butter.
Butter. It's cool. I just tasted it, and I used this in the 42 Below competition a couple years ago with an entry. And the thing I like about it is it's a very strong honey flavor, but it's not cloying. Like the actual, like the honey, it's like you said, it's a little bit darker, smokier, and a little bit, like, it's just drier than most honeys.
It is. I mean, it's, I've never tasted anything like Manuka honey in my life. I mean, you know, if you walk into a store and it's lined up against the rest, it's actually black. It looks black in the jar. It's. I mean, this honey here. I'm holding out the glass up. I can see it, and Damon can see it, but you guys can't. But it's actually, there's still a tinge to the color because, you know, the way that we got the essences to infuse into the regular 42 Below, we use steam. So once we put the honey on the grate, and we pass steam through it because honey has that color. And it's always already slightly liquidous form. As the steam passes through, it catches the color as well as the flavor. So after about 8 hours of steaming the honey, you know, we infused it in. We couldn't get the color out. So if you ever, you guys go there and buy a bottle of this, it's, you know, it's, don't freak out when it's slightly orange. That's just the color of the honey.
Cool. And so going back a little bit to the production of your vodkas, if this isn't too like sensitive of a subject, what is the base of the mash bill like for the distillate?
What do we use?
Yeah,
we use a winter wheat.
Winter wheat,
100% Australasian winter wheat.
Cool.
Which is basically New Zealand and Australia, because we didn't have enough in New Zealand, so we had to take some Australia.
So much for locally sourced.
Right,
well, that's exactly. That's pretty local.
As local as you can get, you know.
Cool.
Off our western neighbor.
So, obviously, you guys started out with the regular, the straight vodka.
Yep.
Sold out of the trunk of a car.
Out of the trunk of a car.
And it started hitting the scene in New Zealand.
Yep.
And at what point did they start making the flavored vodkas?
We rolled through... about 2 years after they launched. I mean, I wasn't a part of 42 Below back in those days. I was solely behind the bar. I came to the States in 2004. They launched about 2002 the first flavor, which was the Fijoa, which is a very typical New Zealand fruit.
And that was the short-lived.
No, people just didn't like it in the States. I used to, when I first came here,
is it still distributed?
Oh, or? All over the world, except here.
Really?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I used to do liquor store tastings, and, you know, it would be, these guys would come in, and they'd be slightly, you know, robust and obviously good sporting backgrounds, and I'd be like, would you like to try some New Zealand vodka? And they're like, sure. I was like, okay, do you want to try the lot? And this is when we were trying, I think in the States, we had Fijoa, passion fruit, and the regular. And they'd be like, sure, and we'd go through the pure, and they'd be like, oh, that's pretty good. And then we'd go in the pageant, and like, yeah. And then they'd get to the Fijo, and I'd be like, guys, this is a sipper, okay? Do not shoot this. And they're like, rah, rah, and shoot it back. And, yep, a couple of times, it was definitely thrown on the floor. So, hence that, we didn't take it, but it's huge in New Zealand. I mean, in New Zealand, we have Fijo or champagne, we do sorbets, cakes, you name it, is made with this fruit. It's beautiful. I love it. I think pumpkin pie is the weirdest thing in the world. but Fijoas, it's totally natural to me.
And that's funny. Like, you know, a lot of times that with the way that your palate changes, and also with the way that your palate interprets things regionally, things like, even like you said, like pumpkin pie.
We roast pumpkin. That's how we eat pumpkin. We roast it.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
How it should be.
Yeah. But, you know, I've talked to people from, like, all over the world, and it's, like, certain things like bourbon, even. They won't like the taste of bourbon, but it's something that, in the United States, we've, like, grown up with.
Well, yeah.
You know.
I mean, for us, I mean, bourbon in New Zealand, I mean, you know, we had cheap stuff. I mean, we had the Jim Beam, the Johnny, Jack Daniels. Mm-hmm. I mean, I definitely went through a few bottles of Jack Daniels growing up, but, I mean, compared to, you know, what you get here and the quality of what you guys have always had has never, well, it's there now, but back when I was there, it hadn't, was starting to come through. Like Woodward Reserve was starting to pop in, mm-hmm. but we didn't have the quality that you guys had here to grow up on, as you say.
Well, but hey, like, I think it's just relative to where you are in the world. I mean, like, you know, people drink Campari and Fernet Branca in Italy, you know, at a very young age. And, you know, it's used as a, like you were saying, like with the Manuka honey being like used for medicinal uses. So that those flavors are familiar with like people from Italy grew up with it.
Love the Italians, though, right? Yeah. You know,
and like you try to put a Campari and soda in somebody's hand here, and they, you know, I think 30% of the United States might be cool with it, but 20% definitely like ecstatic about it. But the rest,
it's pretty freaky.
Yeah, bug juice.
But have you noticed bug juice, right?
Delicious bug juice.
But have you noticed like the Italians? Their whole way of drinking is so much more is
very laid back.
Yeah, and just, you know, no one really gets hammered or drunk. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, New Zealand, unfortunately, we're, again, stuck in the middle of nowhere. And there is a habit of binge drinking, and it's not the best thing in the world, but there is an issue there in New Zealand. So
yeah, I don't know if it was with you that I met a group of bartenders from, I want to say, Auckland.
Yep, definitely.
yeah. They
Now, Auckland's the biggest city in New Zealand, so no doubt. There's two. There's like Auckland, Christchurch, Auckland, Wellington's probably our best cocktail town. Up to par with a lot of the bars in New York, actually. Not maybe two or three. There's like two or three amazing cocktail bars. Actually, a guy there from Motel who does Gunpowder Rum. If, I don't know if you've got any of you guys have heard of that.
Yeah.
He's from Wellington, from a bar in Wellington who does the Gunpowder.
Yeah, it was funny. I was talking to this group of bartenders, and they were just like kind of shocked at the way, like, because they were visiting New York City for the first time, and they were going around to all these cocktail bars and restaurants and just checking out the scene and like how it's done in New York City, which is also very different from the rest of the United States, obviously.
Yeah.
But they were talking about how like the alcohol abuse in New Zealand was like breathtaking.
It's outrageous. It's outrageous. I tell you. I mean, it's 18 to drink.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge part of it, I think.
I just think it's a stupid law to drop it to 18. I mean, because, you know, when I was 18, I was out drinking, but I was 21. But now, you know, and I was 18, but now the drinking age is 18 in New Zealand. There's 16-year-olds, and they don't know how to drink. I mean, I didn't know, well, I kind of didn't know how to drink at 18, but, you know, it was like the younger they don't know how to drink proper spirits or wine, and, you know, the old rocket fuel. I don't know about if you guys had that stuff over here when your kids would just roll into the liquor cabinet and pour every bottle of your mum's thing into a 2-liter plastic container. I never did it, guys. Responsible drinking, that's me, Paul Franich.
Well, thanks for drinking responsibly and also bringing this, like you said, more refined product to the world from the capital of binge drinking. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk more about 42 Below bartending with 42 Below brand ambassador Paul Franich.
Hope for a generation. Hope for a generation. Just beyond my reach, not beyond my sight. Hope for a generation. Hope for a generation. Just beyond my reach. Not beyond my sight. Hope for a generation. Yeah, yeah. Hope for a generation. Just beyond my reach. Not beyond my sight. Hope for a generation. I see it singing. Hope for a generation. I see it singing.
Is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to The Main Course Sundays at 12 p.m. with hosts Patrick Martins and Katie Kiefer. They examine issues from the interconnected worlds of agriculture, cuisine, and sustainability. They sit down with key players in the chain from producer to consumer, farmers, distributors, chefs, activists, and journalists. The Main Course explores every important component of the eating experience, how the farmers raise their product, the distribution channels that move the product, how the chefs prepare it, and how ethics and policy affect everyone involved. Again, that's The Main Course, Sundays at noon on the Heritage Radio Network.
The sound you're hearing is our guest, Paul Franich of 42 Below, shaking up a cocktail.
Yes, indeed.
Tell us what's going into this one.
Well, we're using the Manuka honey, cool. Which I find works phenomenally with your bourbon.
Oh, yeah. Actually. Nice.
So,
nice segue.
Thank you. I've been working on that for days. So what we got here is actually a something that we use. We have a cocktail competition every year in New Zealand called the Cocktail World Cup. And this is the cocktail that you get in your hip flask when you land in Queenstown Airport and get driven to the bungee jump. And what it is it's equal parts 42 Below Manuka honey, bourbon, which we're using in this one, actually, just a good old Woodford Reserve.
Going back to that.
Bring it all together. Nice. Benedictine. And if you want to just chill it down and put it in your fridge, add one part of water as well, and you don't need ice, and then you put it in your hip flask and you're good to go. I am a little bit of Angostura bitters. We're using some Brooklyn Hemispherical rye barrel aged Angostura today. So
nice.
Let's see how that goes.
So as soon as, okay, what happens is regionally, or is it regionally or by city, that you get all these bartenders together for a competition.
Yep.
That's the regional finals. Whoever goes on from that, they go on to a national finals,
yep.
Right?
Yep. So say the United States, we had 13 cities, well, 13 states, the major cities in those 13 states. We had regional finals with 10 bartenders competing. Out of those, we took the top two, and we brought all the top two from each of those 13 states to New York, where we had the national final. Now, we had the national final. We picked the top three, and they become Team USA. They go off to New Zealand. They battle Team Italy, Team England, Team Australia, Team New Zealand, Team France. It's
nice.
Country on country. It's a proper world. It's the cocktail World Cup. And it's phenomenal. It's, you ask anyone that's gone, it's a trip. It's a trip.
And so you're saying this is the drink that, like, as soon as you get off the plane, you give everyone a hip flask.
Yep.
Filled with this drink, which is delicious, by the way.
Yep.
Thank
you.
And, okay, now tell me if this is true or not, but like the first thing you do is you take them to a bridge.
Yep.
To bungee jump.
We throw them off.
You throw them off.
Yep.
Do they have to drink out of the hip flask while they're going down?
No.
Because I heard there, like, it was something like that. It was like,
I can't really, no. No, what we used to do was, we have five competitions going on throughout the whole week. It's a 7-day competition. And the first competition was you have to make a cocktail and shake it. And it was, you know, part of it, all about bartending, having fun as well as making serious cocktails. So this is one of the fun ones where they had to actually bungee jump, making a cocktail, and they were judged with how much liquid they could hand to the judge while hanging upside down from the bungee in a cocktail glass. So they'd shake while they're jumping and bouncing up and down, and then when they're lying down, they'd pour it in, and then, you know, it was pretty. It's good, harmless fun.
Oh yeah, it sounds like I would never have a heart attack doing that.
No, well, I mean, yeah, the first time I did it, I should have probably worn adult diapers at that time. After the first time, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. So some of the other things that you were telling me about the competition is that at the end, like what like. When the finals come up, I mean, obviously there are a bunch of different other challenges during the week or so that you're there.
Yeah.
And what happens? What's the grand prize whenever you win?
Well, the grand prize is
the fact that you got a free trip to New Zealand.
Honestly, mate, it's phenomenal. You know, you get it's 6-7 days of all expenses paid fun with me.
with Paul.
And my cohorts, Boris and Sam Frant from the West Coast. And, you know, the winner gets a helicopter trip up one of the mountains for a massive champagne breakfast.
Nice.
But, you know, everyone's a winner. I think everyone's already gone through so many competitions. And, you know, it's more about camaraderie and bringing everybody together and, you know, bringing these three people.
So pretty much everyone wins if they make it to those the World Cup finals.
Listen, if you have 7-8 countries, you know, you've got 21-24 bartenders who have never met each other in their lives, and we put them up in each country has a two-storied villa.
That's
to
awesome.
Live in with a full bar, and you know, they get to hang out with each other, and they get to hang out with amazing judges. Like last year we had David Wondridge, Salvatore Calabresi, our long lost global brand ambassador Jacob Bryars, and Jason Williams from Sydney. I mean, you know, it's not just a competition. It's, you know, all the judges give seminars through it. You know, we
Oh, I didn't know that.
Totally. So, you know, David got up and did a big chat on the course of punches.
Yeah.
Salvatore, I mean, my God, have you ever met this human being? He's amazing. Yeah. He gave a great chat on martinis and his signatures. And, you know, I get speechless when I think about it because it's so much fun, you know. And then on the last day, we have the competition, which is in front of about 500 people, and they have to actually get up on stage. You know, back in the day, bartending's always, for me, been about entertaining the person on the other side of the bar. And, you know,
sure.
Everyone talks about prohibition times, and this is what the whole trend is now. And, you know, one thing lacking from a lot of these bartenders that think they're like that is the fun side of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like everyone's idol now, like Jerry Thomas and so forth. And they were characters. They were in the news a lot. They're hilarious people.
Yeah, people,
you know,
like
I mean?
Charles H. Baker. You know, he was a larger than life character.
Exactly.
So was Jerry Thomas. You know, these people were like
huge. So the whole idea of the final is to actually they have to perform on stage. So. Yeah. Like this year, the USA team kind of started with back in the 70s.
I Have the Tiger.
No. Well, last year they won it, and they came on with Run DMC. They were actually phenomenal. They spray painted the front of the stage, and it was outrageous. This year they did a whole it was like a play, you know, and they during that week that they're together in New Zealand, that's the time that they have to come up with their final cocktail and their presentation, which is
cool.
A show. And honestly, if you guys get a chance and you get to go to the cocktailworldcup.com or go to YouTube and look at for 42 Below Cocktail World Cup, and we've got a lot of videos of I'm going to laugh now of all the guys doing their final, and it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Nice. Not just the winners, but everyone.
Everybody. Yeah. It's not just about the winners.
Excellent.
Italy won, by the way.
Italy won this year.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Good drinkers.
Well, they've got his feet.
They were in their 40s, though, so they've been around a while.
Oh, nice. Yeah, were the finals held at the Ace Hotel again this year, or
in New York for the U.S. finals?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the U.S. finals were held at the Ace Hotel downstairs, which is great. In New Zealand, we fly everyone to Queenstown, so we actually did it in we theme it every year, and this year was Carnival of the Cocktail. Last year was rock and roll theme, so this year we did it in a huge circus tent in a field by a lake, and had dwarves and tall people and fire breathers and me and some other crazy people.
Nice. I still want one of those guitars that were hanging up in the Ace Hotel from a couple years ago.
That was Below guitar. I've actually got a... No, I'm not going to say that just in case one of my bosses is listening.
So what do you see in the future for this brand and for yourself?
Wow. I mean, for the brand...
Besides the RV trip that you're going to take one of these days.
One day. So yeah, if any of you guys got any ideas for me, I plan with my wife to drive around the United States at some stage and visit every cool place. So I'm sure... if you have any ideas for me or where I should stop, you know, post them in or however you do. For me and the brand, I just hope that we keep going the way we are and people start to embrace, not just the prohibition spirits, but also, the other spirits that have been around.
Absolutely. It's something we were talking about before the show. It's like the... vodka nowadays, like with like these like prohibition style bars, it's like it's not like as heavily it hasn't been as heavily used for the past few years or so, but now it's actually coming back.
It's coming back with a vengeance, yeah, which is cool. I mean, a lot of like this cocktail that we're drinking now, it brings out the flavors of the higher spirit content, 42%, the Manuka honey. It brings out the flavors of the other products. I mean, even when you use the regular vodka and you mix it with something, it brings out...
It intensifies all the flavors that go into that cocktail.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
That's like an old... Well, he's an old guy from Kazuo Ueda, the Japanese great bartender. He always talked about, the intensifying effect of vodka mixed in with other spirits and other ingredients in a cocktail.
Yep.
And it's true if you ever try it.
Yep.
But also, like, just as a base spirit, it's like really coming back. And it must be a very exciting time for you and for the company too.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's a clean slate. When you're using a vodka, it's a clean slate. Actually, you've got to put a lot more work into the cocktail to actually make it unique or flavorful. You're using other gins, rums, they all come with quite a unique flavor. But mm-hmm. when you're using vodka, it's a clean slate. So whatever you put in, it's actually showing that your skills and that's maybe,
exactly. It's like we can all mix rye, vermouth, and bitters. Different types of rye, different types of vermouth, and different types of bitters.
Yeah.
But it's like we know that that works.
You don't want it to taste like water. And you don't want it to taste over floral or that's not
like
even a word.
Like one of those fruit hats.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool, man. Well, we're at the end of our show today. I do want to thank my guest, Paul Franich from 42 Below. It's crazy, man. Going from selling hooch out of the trunk of a car in New Zealand to taking helicopter rides to the top of a mountain for a champagne brunch.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, thanks, mate. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Cool.
All right. I want to thank my producer, Jack Inslee, as well, and we'll see you all next week. Cheers.
Look at that look in his eye. Man, I wouldn't lie. It gets higher than a kite.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Man, I wouldn't lie.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. In the wake of the massive E. coli outbreak in Germany, which was finally traced to organic sprouts, the editors of Food Safety News published an editorial suggesting that all sprouts should come with a warning label. The CDC, or Center for Disease Control, is echoing that sentiment, saying sprouts are not healthy food for everyone. Children, the elderly, and persons whose immune systems are not functioning well should not eat raw sprouts, because current treatment of seeds and sprouts cannot get rid of all the bacteria present. Persons who are at high risk for complications from foodborne illness should probably not eat raw sprouts, according to an article in the current issue of Emerging Infectious Diseases, CDC's peer-reviewed journal, which tracks new and re-emerging infectious diseases worldwide. Although sprouts are often considered a health food, the warm, humid conditions needed for growing sprouts from seeds are also ideal for bacteria to flourish. Salmonella, E. coli, and other bacteria can grow to high levels without affecting the appearance of the sprouts. Researchers have treated both seeds and sprouts with heat or washed them in solutions of chlorine, yum, alcohol, and other chemicals. Some of these disinfectants reduced the levels of bacteria, but a potential hazard remained, especially for persons with weak immune systems. That would be the elderly, children, pregnant women, etc. High temperatures that would kill the bacteria on the seeds would also keep them from sprouting. So until an effective way is found to prevent illness from sprouts, they really should be eaten with caution, if at all. And by the way, it's National Sprout Month. This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Check out a small clip from The Food Scene, hosted by Michael Harlan Turkel, a show where food and art intersect.
I think most recently you had a chocolate waterfall that had 5 tons of chocolate flowing, and you'd put on, a protective suit, walk through a waterfall, yeah. Make your own chocolates within this kind of contained environment. And most recently, a rabbit cafe.
Yep.
Can you explain that one to me a little bit?
Well, And this also slightly comes from jellies as well, because in England, everyone has these rabbit jelly molds. It's the most popular mold. Everyone goes, oh, I had rabbit jellies as a kid. And we've always been utterly bewildered by it. Why rabbit jellies? The only way to get to the bottom of it was to get a whole herd of rabbits, open a cafe with them, and have people touch rabbits and eat.
Yeah.
So it kind of has resonance with one of our favourite cookbooks, which we think an awful lot of modern chefs have is their dark secret under their pillow, which is the futurist.
Want to hear more? Well, tune into The Food Scene live every week, Tuesdays at 3 p.m., or you can find all the archive shows on our website or subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Just Food. Help bring live chickens into food challenge communities through your donations to the Just Food City Chicken Project 2011. The City Chicken Project would not be possible without the volunteer hours, donations large and small, and the vibrant energy and ideas of the communities we work with. Just Food is a nonprofit organization that connects New York City communities and local and urban farmers with the resources and support they need to make fresh, locally grown food accessible to all. To donate, search on Kickstarter.com for Just Food and find their City Chicken Project. For more information on Just Food, visit justfood.org or call 212-645-9880. That's 212-645-9880. Let's keep making New York City a better place to live and eat. The following is a message from HeritageFoodsUSA.com. The difference between wild Alaskan salmon and farmed Atlantic salmon is just as great as the differences between commodity pork and heritage breed pork.
huge. HeritageFoodsUSA.com is lining up a major social buy of sustainably harvested salmon in July and offering it at a phenomenal price to consumers. Check out HeritageFoodsUSA.com for more details on how to get in on this opportunity. Experience salmon the way it should be.